we have negotiated with to provide services associated with our battery system. And it's the picture on the bottom left, that's from our plant. Those are the batteries that have been installed. The purpose of purchasing these batteries is to kind of even out the lines on the graph that you see on the right. So that's historic energy charges, and we experience great variety in the amount of power we consume from, you know, 1 minute to the next. If a large pump comes on, we can experience big spikes in our power usage. So this company has an algorithm, a software that tracks and forecasts our power demands, and basically makes decisions for these batteries on when to store power and when to deploy. That's not the right word, but when to use battery power in order to reduce our PG&E costs. So the agreement is for maintenance of the batteries as well as use of the algorithm to save out costs in electricity. Was there a question? Sorry. So as I said, energy management software and hardware, tracking energy usage, maintenance. It's a 10-year agreement, and the cost that we pay every year is based on the savings that we get. So it's a percentage, and the more money they're able to save for us, they get a slightly higher percentage of those savings. So if there are no questions, the recommendation is to have the public hearing and approve the agreement with the energy management services agreement.
Okay, I hear no questions. I'd like to open the public hearing.
We have not received any written comments, and we'll see if there's anybody want to unmute themselves and make any comments. You can do so now.
So I hear none. So do we need a motion to close the public hearing?
I would recommend a motion to close the public hearing, Madam President.
Okay.
I move we close the public hearing.
Okay.
Seconded.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Albert?
Yes.
Commissioner Audie?
Yes.
Commissioner Aguirre?
Yes. Okay, so then I think if we have no other questions, we would move to adopt the resolution.
Correct.
Okay. So do I have a motion to approve the resolution, move adoption of the resolution?
So moved.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Second.
Commissioner Albert, a roll call, please.
Commissioner Lieberman?
Yes.
Commissioner Albert?
Yes.
Commissioner Audie?
Yes.
Commissioner Aguirre?
Yes.
Great, thank you.
All right. So we are moving. I'm sorry, did I hear somebody? Okay, item number 8, consideration of resolution authorizing to proceed with placement of owner-controlled insurance program for Silicon Valley Clean Water Progressive Design Build Pump Stations Improvement Project.
Okay, and I will give the presentation to this as soon as I can get control. There I am. This is related to the owner-controlled insurance program for pump station improvements. We've used a OSIP, owner-controlled insurance program, for quite a number of years now, the latest of which is for the two other rescue program projects, the gravity pipeline and the front of plant. And similar to those, we wanted to use an OSIP for the pump station project. And there's a lot of advantages to using an OSIP, advantages to the owner specifically, which is why we're recommending it. The way we can manage risk is much more robust, and we actually have the potential, and we've seen quite a bit of savings because we don't incur the markup that contractors would otherwise give us. The recommended coverage are all these things: workers' comp, general liability, excess liability, pollution liability, builder's risk, and owner's protective professional indemnity. These are all coverages that we would normally require anyway in any of our construction contracts. So it's not any more than we would normally require, and it gives us better coverage. Let's see. So the cost of it is $2.18 million. That's all the premiums and all the fees for the coverages that I just showed on the previous slide. The budget we have allocated in our CIP is $3.2 million, so quite a bit less. We're anticipating, so whenever you get an OSIP, you try to anticipate what sort of claims you might get on any particular project. And in your packet, we have a table that shows an estimate of losses that might be incurred, and highlighted in yellow in your packet are what we're expecting in loss range. So we're assuming in a range from $282,000 to $498,000 in workers' comp losses. And what I wanted to point out is so far on the Gravity Pipeline and the front of plant projects, we have quite a small number of claims. And I'm trying to see if I have that in a slide. Right now we have workers' comp claim is about $165,000 for both the GP project and the FOP project. The construction cost of those combined are upwards of $300 million. So it's quite a small claim. Or one of the values of having a design build contract is that we can select the contractor partly based on their safety record. And these two contractors we have for GP and FOP, as well as the pump stations, are very, very safety conscious and have really good safety records. So overall, for rescue, the front of plant and Gravity Pipeline project premium for OSIP is 7.5. For the pump station, it's another 2.18, for a total of 9.68 million for all of the rescue program insurance costs, which equates to about 2.7% on $360 million hard costs. And industry standard is 3 to 5%. So that what that means is that we would normally pay a contractor somewhere between 3 and 5% on insurance cost only. So we do save quite a bit of money going with an OSIP, and again, it's been really successful for us, and that's why we're recommending it again. So with that, I can answer any questions, but the recommendation is to approve procurement of OSIP insurance coverage for the pump station improvements project of rescue. And I can answer any questions.
Yeah, are there any questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you, Teresa, for the overview and for the material in the packet that went out ahead of time. The general class of questions I guess I have, which are all related, have to do with what downside risk we are ultimately absorbing by adopting this program. I appreciate the fact that it has the potential to save money, and that what we've done earlier has in fact saved money. But in my experience with insurance related matters, that's true up until the time you have a really big disaster, and then, you know, like, oops, well, gee, too bad that we can't lay that off on somebody else. So, you know, the general question is, what kind of unknown risks are we accepting? That's not possible to answer. But, you know, are there, for example, reinsurance elements of this where what we're taking on is risk only up to a certain dollar amount, and then after that there is another policy that kicks in to cover us, or are we just is the sky the limit for us?
We have taken on, especially on the liability risk, the general liability, we do have an excess liability coverage.
Okay.
And we wanted that just to ensure that we don't get hit with anything really big. So on pump stations alone, it's $100 million excess liability coverage. We got a really good price on that. Actually, we got really good pricing on the whole OSIP program. And that's because our record, both as an agency as well as the record of our contractors, are really good. So
what is the $100 million fee? Does that mean that we're responsible for the first $100 million and then somebody else is responsible above that?
No. I think the general liability would be the first, and you can see it's $2 million per occurrence on the table on page 72 of the packet. General liability first, the $2 million per occurrence, $4 million general aggregate. Excess of that, I believe, is the excess liability up to $100 million.
I'm sorry, Matt. I was trying to find that page that you were referring to, so I missed part of what you said. Would you mind re-summarizing that?
Sure. So on the page 72 on the table, the first row describes the general liability, which covers $2 million per occurrence with a $4 million aggregate on that occurrence. Excess of that would be picked up from the $100 million policy that Teresa just described.
I see. So we're responsible for the first $2 to $4-ish million, and then depending on the details of the claim, and then up from there up to $100 million, somebody else is responsible for.
A little bit more nuanced than that, even. I think the GL insurance, the first layer, we have a premium that we're paying of about $465,000 for the occurrence of up to $2 million with a deductible of $250,000. So if there was a claim that was a $2 million claim, we would pay the $250,000 on that, and the insurance first layer would pick up the balance.
Oh, okay.
So our exposure on that line is $250,000 per claim.
Okay. And is there something comparable in place for the other elements of the insurance that are being addressed here by us internalizing it, or I obviously didn't understand that part of the packet.
Matt can jump in if you like.
Yeah, let's introduce Matthew Cox here. So Matthew Cox works for USI. He's the one who helped put together and price and they're brokering the insurance coverage. So he can speak more elegantly than I can. But so Matthew can comment about some of the questions you're having.
Thanks, Matt.
Good morning, everyone. So as Matt said, on page 82, if I could direct your focus to the deductible column, that is really where the exposure to Silicon Valley Clean Water, comes to light. So on the general liability, we have a $250,000 deductible per occurrence. And I think it's important to stress it's per occurrence, not per claim. So if we were to have one accident on the site and multiple claims arising from that accident, our responsibility stops at $250,000.
Okay,
and that's the same for workers' compensation. If we have an accident, we have multiple employees who are harmed, the deductible applies once. So that's really your risk factor, is this the stacking of multiple deductibles. So we've minimized that. Moving down the page, the $100 million protection is pure insurance on top of the primary $2 million/$4 million for the general liability. Then on the builder's risk, and that covers the project, the physical aspects of the project itself and all the materials, the deductibles are shown there. They're $50,000, except $500,000 for the underground works. And then for earthquake and flood, we have higher deductibles, 5% on the values at risk with minimums of $250,000. So those were the lowest attachment points or deductibles that were obtainable in the market. And then kind of minor deductibles for pollution liability of $50,000. The owner's protective professional, and that is to cover design errors and omissions. There is no deductible except $100,000 for a third-party claim. So if a third party were to be harmed as a result of the design, hard to imagine a scenario, but if that were to happen, there would be $100,000 deductible, otherwise no deductible.
May I interrupt for a second just to ask a general question based on what you're saying? So if we don't adopt the self-insurance program, then it sounds like the, for lack of a better term, the attachment points or whatnot go get lower, but we have to pay more for that.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Because the contractor is going to build in a worst case scenario deductible, especially in this contracting environment where, you know, contractors are in such high demand. They're actually creating profit, if you will, off of their insurance programs. So they would be far less optimistic than we are on losses. But as Teresa said, 18 months, we bound this project 20 months actually ago. In 20 months, we've had 6 claims for workers' comp totaling $170,000. 5 of those are open, moving to closure. So the record's been, you know, outstanding.
And last question for people is, I presume that this pattern, besides the fact that we've been doing it successfully for several years, this sounds like a not uncommon industry practice?
Very common. Almost 100% of capital improvement projects are done on a controlled insurance program.
Okay,
whether that's owner or contractor controlled.
Thank you. I apologize for not getting that from reading the material.
No, not at all. And that just last point I would add is, you know, the joint ventures want to use disadvantaged business enterprises whenever possible in the various projects, now three different sub-projects, if you will. This allows them to do that. The disadvantaged business enterprises do not have robust insurance programs, but they can be wrapped up into the OSIP.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And through the chair, if I may, just to follow up.
Yes.
Thank you. Just to follow up on Commissioner Olbert's question, and I just want to make sure my understanding of this is correct. When I think of self-insurance, I think of the entity itself as, so to speak, becoming in the insurer, and you can reinsure for excess claims if you want. My understanding of this program is that this is not self-insurance. What we're doing here